Model Test 6.
Section A. Mini Lecture.
In this section, you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the mini lecture once only. While listening to the mini lecture, please complete the gap-filling task with no more than 3 words for each gap. Make sure the word or words you fill in is or are both grammatically and semantically acceptable. You may use the blank sheet for note-taking. You have 30 seconds to preview the gap-filling task. Now, listen to the mini-lecture. When it is over, you will be given 3 minutes to check your work.
The gym craze began to spread at the end of the last century, and going to the gym regularly becomes an essential part of Chinese middle-class lifestyle now. The boom may look like a sign of great improvement in living standards and a sign of commercial triumph. Today, we are going to talk about this newly appeared gym craze in China. In order to get an overall picture, we would first take a look at the group of people who are likely to be gym goers, the reasons for their participation, and some myths in working out at the gym. Firstly, who are likely to be gym goers? According to a survey, the dominant gym goers are university students and those who go to work wearing suits and ties, or the so-called white-collar age group under 35. This group of people tends to be energetic and has enough time and money. More importantly, they are keen to adapt to a new lifestyle. Then, why do they go to the gym? The first reason for this may be the growing number of obese people. This may be the most obvious explanation for the rise of the fitness boom. Maybe going to the gym can be explained as the logical consequence of gluttony. Going to the gym has become an effective way to lose weight and stay healthy. Secondly, for most gym goers, the purpose of going to the gym is not to lose weight, but body shaping. They are already depressingly slim. Most of them visit gyms to tone up, especially university students and young office workers. These people feel inadequate because of the standards by which they judge themselves and visions of perfection pervaded by movies and TV programs. Thirdly, to refresh and energize are also an important cause. Scientific evidence has already proved that doing some exercise increases productivity. Office workers, especially those doing sedentary jobs, sit in an air-conditioned room all day long. They may become bored and tired after work. The gym is a good place for refreshing. With the big mirror around, you can enjoy your swelling biceps and flat tummy, stop overloading the brain, and just release built-up tension by lifting iron. Last but not least, the attraction of staying attractive is really huge. Whether we like to admit it or not, men and women always fall in love at first sight because of perfect body shapes. Perfect body shapes, increased productivity, attracting the opposite sex. Why else should we go to the gym? Just see how Arnold Schwarzenegger became a governor. It's gym time. However, even experienced pros make mistakes in the gym. You may be new to the gym, or you may have been going for years, but there are some mistakes that even seasoned trainers make again and again. If you've reached a plateau in your training, or you're not getting to where you want to be fast enough, there's a good chance that you're making at least one of these mistakes. Next, let's move on to the major mistakes people make in the gym. 1. You always stick to the same workout. We all tend to repeat the things we like doing, so it's no wonder that once we find a workout that suits us, we stick to it. One suggestion is to change your program after 4 to 6 weeks. Otherwise, you get into a pattern and you stop producing results because your body has hit a plateau. 2. You copy the hardcore gym members. It's easy to think that to get as ripped as the guy in your gym who wows all the female instructors with one-armed press-ups, you have simply to follow his lead. The problem is that without knowing what someone else's fitness aims are, copying them could land you with unexpected results or an injury. Be careful who you take advice from, because some fitness instructors are not highly qualified and won't necessarily know what is best for you. 3. You go every day. You may be someone who can't do anything by halves, but working out every day is not sustainable, either physically or mentally. If you go every day, you won't be able to maintain a useful intensity, and you'll get bored, and it becomes a chore, and you'll start missing sessions and losing motivation. The suggestion is to incorporate proper rest days into your schedule. 4. You use the gym for socializing. Go to your gym often enough, and it starts to feel like a second home. This is a dangerous moment. For a lot of people who go every day, it becomes their social life. They chat for half an hour and their training suffers. Then they go to the restaurant afterwards, and suddenly they're at the gym every night. But how much work are they actually doing? So get your priorities right. The gym is there to burn calories and get you fit and looking good. 5. You work through colds. It's often said that if you exercise when you have the beginnings of a cold, you'll work it out of your system. This is nonsense. Actually, when you train, you weaken your immune system because you ask it to repair the muscles you've damaged in order for them to get stronger. If you're feeling ill, eat well and take 2 days off to recover so you're fully fit to begin training again. Okay, to sum up, today's lecture is about the gym craze nowadays and has mainly covered the reasons and myths of gym going. Hope the information provided can offer you some help when you decide to be one of the gym goers.
Now, you have 3 minutes to check your work. This is the end of Section A mini-lecture.
Section B, interview.
In this section, you will hear one interview. The interview will be divided into two parts. At the end of each part, five questions will be asked about what was said. Both the interview and the questions will be spoken once only. After each question, there will be a 10-second pause. During the pause, you should read the four choices of A, B, C, and D, and mark the best answer to each question. You have 30 seconds to preview the questions. Now, listen to part one of the interview.
May I come in?
Come in, please.
Good morning, Mrs. Taylor. I hope it's not too early to bother you.
Never mind, Jason. Take a seat.
Thanks. Well, you know, I'm writing a paper for Professor Johnson's assignment, but I'm totally at a loss. I wonder if you could give me some advice.
Certainly. Tell me what's in your mind.
Prof. Johnson asks us to do some research on campus life and write a paper. I have a lot of opinions myself, but concerning doing research...
First things first, do you have any particular aspects you want to research on?
Not very specific. Maybe courses students take here, canteen, library, entertainment, things like that.
To do research, the first thing you need to do is narrow down your topic. What you mentioned just now can all be selected. However, if you cover all of them, everything will be just touched upon a little. So you need to find out the topic you are most interested in.
Well, in that case, let me see. I got it. I want to talk about extracurricular activities. This is the part I am most interested in.
Good. Now you've chosen your research topic. Then let's come to the second part. How would you like to carry out your research?
How to carry out my research? What do you mean?
Well, writing a research paper is quite different from an argumentative essay you are familiar with. Other people's opinions must be included, so you need to have a questionnaire survey or an interview at least.
I've done questionnaire surveys before for Professor Watson's assignment, but people give me totally different ideas. What is the point of collecting ideas just like chaos?
Generally, questionnaires are used if you want to get opinions of lots of people, and it's not easy to design a questionnaire. Most questions should be selective. If you only ask people to write down their own opinions, what you get is chaos, like what you just said now.
What do you mean by selective questions?
Just like multiple choice questions in your exam papers. You ask a question and give some options to choose. Then you may get information in an organized way.
Oh, I see.
This is the end of part one of the interview. Questions 1 to 5 are based on what you have just heard.
Question 1. Why did Jason come to visit Mrs. Taylor?
Question 2. What theme will Jason focus on about his research?
Question 3. Which aspect can be included in the research?
Question 4. According to Mrs. Taylor, what is the first thing of doing research?
Question 5. What did Jason decide to talk about in his research paper?
Now, listen to part two of the interview.
In fact, there's a very good book on how to write questionnaires in the library. I'd certainly recommend you reading it.
Really? I'll go for it in the afternoon. Maybe I will get some valuable information on my research topic there.
Doing a literary research is necessary, of course. But it's not a good idea to do the whole project only by reading other people's research.
Why?
Because all research is biased, and you only read what other people think without developing your own ideas.
So questionnaires are important.
Right. A much better approach is to interview people. People will give you abundant information and opinions on what you ask.
But Mrs. Taylor, I've tried interviewing people for other assignments, but people seem reluctant to talk. They often have no time and just give short answers.
That's because you're using the wrong approach. If you try to stop people on the street, it's unlikely you will get true responses. People are often too busy with their work or studies to answer your questions. What you should do is advertise for people to take part in your survey. The college notice board is an excellent place to do this. Then you will get people who genuinely have something they'd like to say.
Could I interview my classmates? It would be much easier to get them talk.
Classmates are a very good source of information to begin with, but it's better to talk to as many different people as you can. However, if you have trouble talking to other people, why not? You could still come up with some interesting results.
Is there another way I could conduct research, besides interviews and questionnaires, I mean? Sometimes it is stressful to talk to people.
Well, in that case, you can do an observation study when you watch what people do and take notes.
Is this a good method, too?
It's a very good method, and it can reveal some interesting results. But don't rely on it, because an observation study is you interpreting other people's actions. Therefore, you need to combine it with another method.
Questionnaires, for example.
You've got it.
By the way, Mrs. Taylor, what do you think about the internet as a source of information?
Well, what can I say? Of course, there's a lot of information available on the internet, but you can waste a lot of time finding it. Personally, I'd avoid it. Libraries are a much better source of information, and librarians are very knowledgeable in their field. So talk to them, because they are often the best guide you have to source information.
I agree. Mrs. Taylor, thank you very much for your advice.
My pleasure. Good luck with your paper.
This is the end of part two of the interview. Questions 6 to 10 are based on what you have just heard. Question 6. Why does Mrs. Taylor suggest not to do the whole project only by reading other people's research?
Question 7. How to advertise for people to participate in the survey effectively, according to Mrs. Taylor.
Question 8. What does Jason say about talking to people when doing research?
Question 9. How many means of getting information does Mrs. Taylor altogether suggest?
Question 10. What is Mrs. Taylor's attitude towards searching information on the internet?